It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. You know, I have been enjoying this wonderful spring weather here in the great state of Arizona. I know people always, you know, it's just the way humans are, right? So you don't think that Arizona has, you know, a spring, but it does. It's a very nice spring. And I'm always amazed how, no matter what the situation is, right, that beauty and nature thrives, right? So here in this, in the great heat of Arizona, we do have some beautiful trees, you know, and plants and stuff like that. And I'm just amazed. If it wasn't for modern technology like air conditioning and pools, I don't know if I could survive out here. It's wonderful. The weather here, if you like sunlight, it's great. And there's a lot of great things to be fond of. But anyway, what is my point? Enjoying the spring weather, we in our great state are currently in the middle of a teacher strike, I should say. And I think this has happened in a couple of other states. The Red for Ed, and I don't think there's ever a good time to go on strike, especially when it's so close to the end of the year, school year. But I do want to say I do respect people who are out there trying to do the right, you know, what's right for them. They're not using violence. They're not using, smear campaigns. They are just invoking their rights in a peaceful demonstration. And you know what? Honestly, teachers are so important. And most of them are completely, completely underpaid. And the quote of the day is what this is all about, right? I was leading up to this, is live life to the fullest and focus on the positive. Live life to the fullest and focus on the positive. And that quote is brought to you by Susan Baker, is a listener who emailed this to me. And the actual quote is attributed to Matt Cameron. I'm not sure who Matt Cameron is, but he gets the credit for that quote. Susan Baker gets the credit for bringing it to my attention. And if you have a favorite quote of yours, send it in. We'll read it on the air and, you know, give you some love there as well. Great guest on the show today. And I'm excited to have her on the show. Karen Sedetall is a professor of accounting at Emory University's Quezetta Business School, along with accounting research colleagues from the College of William and Mary and the University of Missouri. She has conducted one of the first studies on the use of performance evaluation collaboration committees. The study Karen is going to talk about today focuses on how to improve the measurement of performance. Karen Sedetall, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you for having me, Bert. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
I find this to be, I think this is something that most people are interested in, right? Because we always hear about performance and peak performance and improving your performance. And so I got to ask you, you know, you're a professor of accounting. How did this all come about? What led you to create this study and trying to figure out the measurement of performance?
Well, Bert, you know, people often ask me, what exactly does an accounting professor research? It's not how to build a better spreadsheet. What accounting research is about is measurement and measurement of performance. You were talking about the teacher strike. And one thing we know is that there are some settings where it's very hard to measure performance. And I think performance of teachers is one such setting. And so we're interested in how organizations can improve the measurement of performance of their employees.
Yeah, you know what? And it's funny that you applied it that way. To me, that makes total sense. You know, I think that one of the things that frustrates people when it comes to, you know, not just teachers, but I remember a few years ago, there was he had just under the Obama administration, and this is not about politics, but he was, I think it was Secretary of the Veterans Administration, Robert McDonnell, I believe was his name. And he was, you know, he went in there and he basically fired 1,000 people his first day on the job. And of course, they were able, you know, I don't know how many of this 1,000, but a large percentage of these 1,000 people that were let go, you know, made a big stink about it, and they felt as though they weren't properly measured, and that, you know, how do you measure, you know, their performance and blah, blah, blah. So I think this is very interesting, not only to apply it to, you know, like you said, the teachers, or in my case, the VA, but, you know, your own employees or things of this nature. I think it's going to be, it's ultimately what helps you keep a job when times are tough, right? Because when times are good, everybody gets a job. But when times are tough and they're letting people go, they only want to keep the best.
Well, that's right, Bert. And the problem is that in these types of settings, the Veterans Administration, like the teachers, the type of performance that individuals are doing is more complex. It's more, you know, it's not a physical activity. It's pretty easy to measure performance of an assembly line worker. You can simply count the number of units the person has assembled. But if you start talking about a business manager or an auditor or any of these professional settings, then it becomes more difficult to assess performance. So what we end up doing, what companies and organizations end up doing, is they end up assessing performance in a very subjective way. And that brings a lot of discretion into the performance evaluation process. And that definitely has advantages, but it also comes with some disadvantages.
Sure. So talk about this. I mean, you know, how did you get around this challenge? Because like you said, if it's something like, what do you call it, an assembly worker, that's pretty easy to calculate. But yeah, I mean, other than that, when it's not that easy to calculate, how did you work around this challenge?
Well, the focus of our study was on subjective performance evaluations. And these are almost all companies, almost all organizations do some form of annual performance review of their employees. About over 90% of organizations use performance evaluations. And oftentimes those, as I said, are subjective or discretionary because they're evaluating more professional type employees. So we were interested in how companies can improve that subjective performance evaluation. And one of the ways a number of companies are trying to do that is through the use of these calibration committees. And the idea is that you've got a number of supervisors, each of whom is assessing the performance in a subjective way of a number of different employees. So that introduces some biases into the process because it is a subjective process. And so these calibration committees can help mitigate those biases and make sure the system is being applied fairly across all the different supervisors and all the different employees. You mentioned a minute ago the importance of promotions. If there's not a fair and equitable way to evaluate performance across employees, then you run the risk of promoting the wrong employees or not rewarding the right employees. And this can lead to problems within the organization.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about the collaboration committee. First of all, what is it? How big? Talk about this.
Well, it's a calibration committee. So it comes from the word, you know, calibration. So it's a committee that calibrates the ratings across the different supervisors. So for example, you might have two supervisors. And for one supervisor, they observe performance and they may rank an employee a 5 on a scale of 1 to 5. A different supervisor may see that exact same employee and rank them as a 2. So they just have different standards. And of course, this introduces inequities in the performance evaluation system. I'd much rather work for the supervisor that ranks me as a 5 than as a 2. I imagine you would as well.
Sure.
And so, yeah, a calibration committee would come in, and it's typically a committee of individuals. It might be at the same level of the supervisors. It might even include some of the supervisors, or it might even be one level up higher in the hierarchy. And the individuals, the committee members, would take all the performance evaluations of all the employees across probably a number of different supervisors and then try to calibrate them against each other. So, you know, the same performance will get the same ultimate rating regardless of which supervisor that employee happens to work for. So that's that idea of calibrating across the different supervisors.
Gotcha. You know what, and I like this idea of having a calibration committee. Simply because, as you said, everybody has these biases. And so by having these calibration committees, hopefully you're going to reduce, you know, our filters, our biases, right?
Yeah, that's right. So there's quite a bit of research in this, looking at the biases that people bring to any kind of a subjective evaluation process. What we know is that supervisors, first of all, tend to be too lenient. And you know, that kind of makes sense. If you're going to make an error in evaluating an employee, you'd rather make an error in favor of the employee. And why might that be? Well, none of us wants to have that difficult conversation with an employee. So we would rather err on the side of the employee. And so we see ratings that are by and large too lenient. Another bias that supervisors tend to introduce is that they don't do a very good job discriminating among different employees. So they tend to give ratings that are all sort of bunched up together. Now, this is a problem because if you truly do have an outstanding employee, you want to make sure that employee is rated as such and then rewarded. Because if they're not, then you stand the risk of losing those employees. So these are the biases that research has shown are, you know, we often see in subjective performance evaluation. And then, of course, in addition to that, what I already mentioned was inconsistencies across supervisors. So these are the primary things that people suggest that a calibration committee can help with, is removing the leniency bias, trying to make sure that there's enough discrimination among employees in terms of identifying the high performers relative to the low performers, and then again, trying to make the ratings consistent across different supervisors.
Yeah. You know, the thing that sticks out to me is that consistency. That would be such a such a great tool for everybody, or not maybe tool, but what a great strategy or blessing or result. That's the word. What a great result if you could have that consistency, because anybody who's ever had a performance evaluation, even though they're not supposed to, sooner or later, you know, you're going to talk to your colleagues about it, right? And sooner or later, you're going to find out that you got the same rating as somebody who is maybe not as efficient, is not as dedicated, who's constantly, you know, absent from work. And you're going, what the flip? Why am I busting my, you know, my hump for when I'm getting the same, you know, rating as this person?
Well, that's exactly right. And the low performer probably would like that system, wouldn't they? Because they'd be getting as good a ratings as the high performer. And the problem is the high performer won't like the system, and you run the risk of losing those people. And so you end up with all the low performers in the organization and losing the high performers. So it's really also about retention of the high performer. So it's about making sure that consistent, so rewards are delivered fairly and reflect actual performance and contribution, but then also about retention of those top performers.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? And again, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I do want to mention this. performance evaluations sometimes become part of a, we call it administrative or legal proceeding, right? And matter of fact, back to the Veterans Administration, that was one of the things that they used. Some of these low performers that were let go basically brought up their performance evaluation that they were, you know, average. They were within standards and stuff like that. And I bet you it was because, you know, they didn't have a these type of committees. You know, people are, you know, a lot of these supervisors are overworked and, you know, they just want to rubber stamp this thing and move it on because they got other things they have to worry about.
That could very well have been the case. I'm not familiar with the details of what went on. You know, a couple of things, they might not have had a committee. They might not have documented the performance ratings as they should have. Right. You could have had a situation, and I'm certainly not saying this is to be the case in that particular example. You could have had a situation where these truly were underperforming employees, but because their ratings had been inflated, then that underperformance was not adequately documented. So a calibration committee can make sure that that happens and that documentation of true performance is maintained. So, I hadn't thought about the legal angle, but I think any time you can justify the ratings that are given employees, you would be on better standing when those types of situations arise.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so you mentioned, a bunch of the benefits, and were you surprised by any specific findings of your study?
Well, we really set out to try to see if the purported benefits really held together. There have been a lot of articles written about these committees talking about how they solve all of these problems and really pitching them as the answer to all those problems. So we wanted to find out if that was actually the case. And so we went to one organization. This was a large organization that began using these committees. And one thing I guess I shouldn't have been surprised about, but I was a bit, was that they only adjusted ratings. The committee only made adjustments to the ratings that the supervisor initially gave about 25% of the time. Less surprising was that most of the adjustments that the committee made were downward adjustments of those ratings. And the reason that's not surprising is, remember, there's a leniency bias. So the supervisors tended, as we've seen in research documented over and over, the supervisors likely were being too lenient with the employees. And so the adjustments that the committee did make, by and large, were downward adjustments. So in that sense, they were serving to mitigate the leniency bias in those ratings.
Yeah, and I get that. And that, to me, that makes sense. And you know, 25% is a pretty big number. That's significant. And as you said, our large percentage of those were downgraded or whatever. But it goes to show you exactly as you said, that leniency bias, all that other stuff. I like that, you know. And plus, I think as an employee, you know, nobody wants to be told they're not doing a good job. But it's very difficult to take it personally when, quote, it's coming from a committee versus your direct supervisor. I'd much rather have a committee saying, "Hey, Bert, you gotta pick up the pace a little bit or whatever," versus having, having my direct supervisor, you know, call me out. So, for me personally, I like that committee. What do you call it? The committee approach for that reason.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So it gives a little bit more ownership to more individuals in the organization for the ratings of the employees. So I think there's benefits both from the supervisor's point of view as well as from the employee's point of view. Now, typically the employee would not know whether or not his or her rating had been adjusted. And I think that makes a lot of sense because I think it could create other problems if an employee knows that the original rating given by his or her direct supervisor was then downgraded by this committee. So the employees typically only know the end rating, performance rating, that comes out of the committee.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Okay, so you mentioned this was a large organization. So then my question is, when is using a calibration committee, when does that make sense?
It makes sense, again, in a more professional type setting where
right.
there's benefits. Well, first of all, where it's difficult to assess performance objectively. So the organization we looked at was an internal audit organization of a very large multinational. And so how do you assess the performance of an auditor, basically? You can't just simply count the number of audits or count the number of working papers. I mean, you could do those things, but it wouldn't really be very informative about that auditor's true performance. So this is more of a knowledge task setting. And that's when it makes sense to use subjective performance evaluation, because a supervisor can look at the activities of that employee, can do basically a holistic assessment of that employee's efforts and performance throughout the evaluation period. They can assess the softer skills like leadership, and they can do so in a very subjective way. So there's certainly advantages to subjectivity. And so we would expect, and we would like to see the use of calibration committees in settings such as this, knowledge type of jobs and, you know, more professional type settings where subjectivity is needed, but then the committee can be used to try to mitigate some of the disadvantages of that subjectivity that we've already talked about. So the biases
right.
and inconsistencies.
No, I love it. I think that this idea of collaboration committees makes a lot of sense, especially, as you said, in areas where it's very subjective or very difficult to measure performance. You know, how do you do that? And I'm a big believer that, quote, the soft skills are the most important skills to have. But again, how do you measure that? You know, and
that's right.
How does, you know, how is somebody going to look at that? And I love this idea of getting these committees together. And again, you're going to eliminate that leniency bias. You're going to eliminate some other biases, and hopefully come out with a more accurate performance review. And as you mentioned earlier, it's going to reward the high performance more accurately. It's also going to unfortunately reward the non-performers more accurately. I think it's a win for everybody.
That's right. Well, possibly not the non-performers.
That's right. Except for them. It's a win
right.
for everybody except for them. All right. So let me ask you this. From the time that you started this study until it was concluded, Karen, how long of a time was that?
Oh, goodness. This was a pretty in-depth study. This study involved doing interviews with people within the organization. So from the time we started just data collection to where we finished, I don't know, that probably took some number of months, maybe 8 or 9 months. And then the study itself, in terms of all the way to publication, that's a pretty time-consuming process in the academic world. So it's been, you know, well over a year to try to get the study all the way through the process. And, you know, I think it's really just the beginning. I think we have quite a bit more to learn. This truly is the first empirical study of the effects of these types of committees. And you asked me, where would I think these committees would be valuable? And I think I can answer those kinds of questions. But if you had asked me the question, what's the best way to set up a committee, what's the best way to set up the process, the calibration process, I wouldn't have a whole lot of answers for you yet, Bert. And that's because there's just more research, I think, that needs to be done. And my colleagues and I are looking for opportunities to do that. And so, you know, this is a study of one organization. I think it's a representative organization, but I certainly would not say we know everything we need to know about this, and there's, I suspect, a lot of room for improvement in how these committees are being used.
Yeah, that That's very interesting, because that's exactly what people are going to say. Well, that, hey, this is great, great information, Karen. But how do we start applying it? And you know, the other thing that's interesting, I could see this in the near future becoming a thing. So, and what I mean by that is, it literally could become a service that can be outsourced for smaller companies that maybe don't have enough people for a calibration committee. They can outsource that, and it's really becomes extremely objective.
Well, I'm not sure I would go so far as to say it's objective. I think the process is always going to be a subjective process.
Okay.
You say it's going to, it very well could become a thing. In some sense, it already is. Evidence suggests that more than 50%, at least of large organizations, use calibration committees. I don't think we know much about smaller organizations that you're referring to, but large organizations, at least half of them, are using
right.
calibration committees. They may call them something different. That calibration committee is a term that we're using, but a lot of companies are using them. But I do agree with you in the sense that, in terms of it becoming a bigger thing, in the sense that, of course, we're moving more towards a knowledge-based economy. And so the role of subjectivity and performance evaluation is going to become more important. We're moving away from the assembly line jobs more towards the high complexity types of jobs. And that's when subjectivity becomes important as a way to evaluate employee performance. And then, of course, that's going to increase the benefits of having the calibration committee that we're setting.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, if somebody wants to reach out, find the study, learn more about collaboration committees, what's the best website? What do you recommend they go?
Well, I suggest they could start by just contacting me. I can point them to a number of different resources. I can talk with people about what they're doing in the organization and potentially discuss ways to improve their processes. So they can reach out to me on my website at Quizzetta Business School.
Excellent. QuizzettaBusinessSchool.com?
No, my email address would be ksedatole, ksedatole, at emory.edu.
Excellent. So I'm going to put that here on the show notes. So if you guys want to reach out to Karen and get her thoughts on using collaboration committees, see if it's a good fit for your organization, then you guys can reach out to Karen via her email. That's ksedatole, that's S-E-D-A-T-O-L-E, at emory.edu. Karen Sedatol, thank you so much for stopping by today. I'm excited about these collaboration committees. I'm glad you came by and shared the information today.
Well, thank you, Bert. I'm glad to hear it. And I'd be happy to talk to any of your listeners about potentially looking at what they're doing and how we might be able to help. So thank you for having me on today, Bert.
You bet. You bet. Good stuff there from Karen Sedatol from the University of Emory University. And, the University of Quizzetta Business School as well. And it's, I don't know about you guys. They definitely hit me up on Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or Instagram and let me know what your thoughts are on this collaboration committees, because for most people, I think this would take a little bit of the pressure off, if maybe not all of the pressure off, of having to do these evaluations all by themselves. They're able to be more impartial. And as Karen suggested, this is just the beginning, right? This is going to start to develop, and it already is developing, because as she mentioned, large organizations are using these committees. I can see this starting to be more mainstream, and eventually maybe, I don't know, if a software could maybe streamline this, maybe an app. Could it be outsourced, outside for smaller companies? As Karen said, it's just the beginning. People aren't even best practices probably hasn't been, quote, written yet, right? We're not really sure, or Karen, as she said, is not really sure how to go about setting up a collaboration committee for your organization because not enough of those have been, set up. And so there's not a blueprint. That's the word I'm looking for. There's not a blueprint on how to do it best. And so anyway, give me your thoughts on it. Do you like it? Do you hate it? How are you going to use it? Are you just going to ignore it? As always, my friends, I appreciate you very much for stopping by and listening. Do me a favor, please, and share this program with everybody you know. Let's help as many companies as possible. And if you get a moment, go out to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/Burt Martinez and check out my interviews there. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.